You know what I hate, Jack?
I could name probably a lot of things, but what's on your mind right now?
Oh, what's on my mind right now? Daylight savings times. Are we all still farmers? Yep. No.
I mean, I am. It's... Oh, I'm not a farmer.
You're not a farmer. You work for a software company.
It looked like I actually had you convinced there for a second. For those of you just listening, Adam like gave me the, did you tell me you were a farmer and I forgot look?
I just tried to remember, like what's that farm look like in your backyard?
Yeah, yeah. In my, I think it would be generous to say we have an eighth of an acre, right, for our house. I mean, you don't have plots, which is actually really nice. There's no yard work. It's all rock.
See, the funny thing is you live in a very physically large state. I live in the smallest state in the union, and I got an acre parcel.
The difference is there's probably the same amount of non-state land in Nevada as there is in Rhode Island. Like, what? Most of the state is federal and state lands.
I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably a little bit more here. It's a big state, but yeah. But no, it's majority of it is a lot of federal lands here in the state of Nevada. But
well, that's interesting.
Yeah. But no, I hear you about daylight saving time. Like, well, it's one of those weird things. I hate daylight saving time, except for the fact that I prefer to be on daylight saving time. Like the summer, the time zone makes a lot more sense here because like the sun is almost up before. Well, no, the sunrise is like around 5 a.m. before this last weekend when we just switched over. The sunrise was like 5 a.m. And I'm like, that's so early. And then the sunset was before 5 p.m.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh. So I like being on the daylight savings shift. Just I prefer we never switched back.
Yeah.
Right? There's no reason to switch back. Arizona got it right.
Yeah, that's right. They're the only state that doesn't do it anymore, huh?
Parts of Indiana. Indiana, it's like a county by county decision, I think. You can drive in a straight line through Indiana and change time zones like five times. It's awesome. In fact, I remember once when I stopped somewhere in Indiana and I went to the gas station and I was like, well, what time is it? And this is before cell phones. This is when I was going across country with a paper map. And I'm like, you know, what time is it here? Because I know I want like the place I'm going to like closes at 8. And I like it. And she's like, I don't know. Like, you work here. She's like, yeah, but I don't actually know what time zone my work is in. Which, as I thought about it later in life, I'm like, that's probably a lie because she probably knows what time she has to be at work.
Yeah.
But the point being, people in Indiana don't know what time it is unless they're at their houses because of how frequently the time zone can shift right around that line. It's like, yeah, it's confusing.
That is confusing. But yes, daylight. I was freak running around my house tonight like, wow, it's 6 o'clock and it's still light outside. Like, oh.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, it's right now. I mean, I'm on Pacific Coast time, so it's not evening yet. But I enjoyed yesterday getting more light towards the end of the day. It's nice.
Yeah.
Even though you honestly just think about it, you're just now, everyone in the country mm-hmm. has forcibly become more of a morning person is all that means. We all just were forced to get up earlier. This is what everyone's really mad about is if you're not a morning person, you're being forced to be a morning person. Yeah. Now the world's going to, it's like your work decided, no, this for 6 months out of the year, you come in an hour earlier just because.
just because we want just to. Because. I'm already a morning person. My wife is not. I totally am. Mm-hmm. Like I'm like a jump out of bed. Like, let's get going.
Oh, yeah. because I don't drink coffee, I don't drink caffeine. I have caffeine. When I wake up, I just wake up because my body's not requiring a caffeine boost to stimulate to get going. But I wouldn't necessarily call myself a morning person. But when I wake up, I'm like, all right, I'm awake. I know the crap out of everyone I know.
I don't need it, but I do like it. I'm a creature of habit. I hear that. You know, my French roast, and then mm-hmm. I like my Pike's Place, and I like them in order. They will not be reversed because Pike's Place is for after breakfast and French roast is before.
Pike's Place is for dumping directly in the trash can.
No, it's not.
So I love nasty. Pike's Place. So Pike's Place was their volumetric save money roast
yep.
that they knew they could make on the cheap and distribute to every Starbucks. and it's nasty. It's nasty.
I like nasty coffee. Ugh. I like diner coffee.
Ugh. See, the thing is, I love coffee. I always do decaf variety, which for those of you who are older than me, it's not the same chemical decaf process. It's actually decaffeinated. There's not a lot of caffeine in decaf like there used to be. But I love the flavor of coffee. I just can't do the caffeine, which is a whole different story. A whole different story.
You could switch to Sanka.
Are we kidding? So welcome to Demo Jockeys, everyone, where Adam makes poor life decisions on his beverages. I'm your host, Jack Cochran. With me is my host, Adam DiTommaso.
Hello, everyone.
Oh, we got a fun episode. Sanka. So we just finished recording with Maddie Stremick. Formerly from the Pre-Sales Academy. I'm repping my Pre-Sales Academy t-shirt today in her honor, currently of Better Career. She joined us to talk through Stories That Stick by Kendra Hall. We can hold up the book if you're watching the video. We'll do it without covering the name. I mean, we're getting so good at that.
Totally.
Totally. I should be a professional book holder person. I don't know.
Kind of like Vanna White was a letter turner.
Probably not going to be. It's a great conversation we had. We talked about everything. We talked about telling stories, the wrong kind of stories to tell. We talked about interview tips. I think interview tips you're going to see next week, though. So you have to come back for the interview tips stuff. Had all kinds of fun conversations. And we also had our first two people joining us backstage.
That was neat. Episode.
That was a lot of fun. So if you want to join us backstage, that basically is you watching the episodes of the interview like a live stream, come over to slack.demojockeys.com or go to demojockeys.com and click the link to join the Slack. I post the link in there whenever we have got a recording. You can come, hang out, post comments, join the conversation. Just experience the episode differently if you like as well. So we'll keep doing that. That was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that.
I did enjoy that too. And I just would like to point out that besides the fact that that's the first t-shirt you've ever worn on a Demo Jockeys podcast.
No, I've actually done this look before, where I've done like this type of a coat over like a plain t-shirt. This is the first printed t-shirt, not plain t-shirt. Come on,
Jack's moving in on my Steam.
I know. Pretty soon, I'm gonna start breaking out my gaming t-shirts
and the baseball hats,
giving you a run for your money. Now, I might bring a fedora out sometime just to throw you off a little bit. Yeah. Anyways, let's get into the interview, and we'll see you afterwards, everybody. Well, Maddie, welcome to Demo Jockeys. We are so very excited to have you join us here today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I've loved listening to previous episodes, so I feel honored to actually be a guest on the podcast.
Oh, we're excited to have you here, particularly because, I mean, your career is pre-sales. You're very much involved with pre-sales, and just your general background on pre-sales really is. It's kind of what the show is all about, the people we're trying to help and really kind of give direction to with the books that we read and hopefully say, hey, maybe this is a good book for you too.
Yeah, absolutely. Stories and pre-sales go hand in hand. I feel like you can't have one without the other.
Yeah, oh, totally. Well, a lot of people try. I mean, I don't think I told good stories when I was getting started. I think I was pretty much click here. And then after that, you click here.
So fair. That's true.
Which actually I believe is how I had met you. I'd started volunteering for Pre-Sales Academy, which is where you were at previously. I think I actually may have reached out to you initially to say, hey, do you need volunteers for this thing? Because I just kind of had found out about it. And you're like, yes, absolutely. And so the things that happened in Pre-Sales Academy, what I loved about it, and why I liked always kind of coming back for more was, I wish I'd had something like that when I was getting started. Okay. Because someone to tell me, here's the basics of what to do. Not only that, but to hear from career professionals about things to think about differently, how to think about differently, get coaching from them with a little bit of pressure of being graded where you might fail. I mean, that would have sincerely pushed me maybe a bit more over the edge.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what most people say, too, when they find out about Pre-Sales Academy is that, oh, I wish I had this. And I know personally, I mean, I think the first demo I ever gave was based off of a script that I had memorized word for word. And you can imagine that for the customers, that was probably a painstaking experience. But I, you know, that was the only way that I knew how to like try to learn things in such a quick way. And if I had had coaching, I'm sure I would have done things a lot differently.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I've done the word for word demo. I've done that and the feature function tour.
This
is the filter button. When you click it, you can filter.
It's narrating the click path. Yes. You know, now I'm going to go over here and click this. We've all done that.
Showing someone how to log in is always my favorite starting point of a demo, right? As though we've never logged into an application before and don't know how it works. Oh, you have a username and a password. It's very secure. Click login. It will take you to our screen where you're logged in as the user. As you can see in the top right, you can see I'm logged in. If I was logged into someone else, it would show someone else. I may or may not have given a demo that started that way before.
Very compelling, you know, really captured us.
You're hooked from the beginning. You're hooked from the beginning. Well, we are talking about Stories That Stick by Kendra Hall. And Adam and I can hold up our copies of the books. If you have yours at the ready, you got to hold it up and try not to... Yeah, you got to try not to cover the names. See, that's the...
I'm sorry,
it's
Kendra.
It's harder than you think, right? It's the hard... That's for probably the first four episodes, we both were just covering... Okay, Adam, now you're just holding the book upside down. That's not going to do it. We struggle with not covering the name. It's now a skill that you have to learn how to Vanna White your book appropriately.
Oh, totally.
Is that a reference anyone gets anymore? Vanna White, is she still doing... Do people know who that is?
She's still alive?
I'm sure she's got to be. She's not that old.
Pat Sajak's dead.
I'm afraid you're going to have to tell me who she is.
I don't know. Oh, no.
Oh, now I'm really old.
So my reference was lost on you. Okay, that's the question. That's like, do people not know what that is? People don't know who Vanna White. So the Wheel of Fortune. Are you familiar with Wheel of Fortune?
Yes.
Okay. So when you've watched Wheel of Fortune, the person, do they have a person up there like turning the letters in any way? Or is it all automatic now?
Well, I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember there being a person flipping it.
That's that person for the longest time was Vanna White.
Oh, okay.
And so whenever you're like showing something, it's like you're doing your best Vanna White impression because she was up there just to flip the letters around.
And all these books are about the size of the letters, which is kind of funny.
Yeah. Before, she first was doing it when she had to physically turn something, right?
Yeah.
Versus like in the later years, by later years, I mean still a long time ago, it was like she would touch the frame and... I gotta say, Ron's saying she just touched them now. Absolutely. Yeah. The frame, I guarantee you was not touchscreen. There was someone, I can guarantee you, because this is before touchscreen technology really took off. Now you had touch lamps, but I doubt they made every one of those things a touch lamp. I'm sure that there was a person waiting backstage, and when she, hit it now. Like they hired an intern for every show, has to.
You're probably right.
Back there. I need a paycheck.
Yeah, please.
I feel like she barely touched it, too. It was just like a light. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's
very graceful.
Very Vanna White, right? Like now you know why we say that, right? And you may have mentioned I actually had called out someone making a comment here. If you want to join Watched Us, we have a backstage open now. You can join. We have... a couple people here in the backstage joining us and throwing in comments. So if you want to do that, feel free to join our Slack. All right. That's my plug in the middle of the interview. We'll keep going. So I want to talk about the book, Stories That Stick with Kendra Hall. Adam and I talked about this last week. I'd love to hear from you as you'd read through it. What stuck out to you as you were reading Stories That Stick?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me for this episode to speak on this book, because to be honest, I feel like this book has been so inspiring for me right now and where I am and in life and my career. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, I've recently been reading more fiction, as just kind of like a fun hobby. And so it's actually been a second since I've read more of an educational, informative book, I would say in the last 2 months. And this one, I honestly couldn't put it down at times, because she, in order to talk about stories, gave story after story after story. Yeah. And so sometimes where I feel like my memory is a goldfish, is like a goldfish, I remember so much of it, actually, even just in the way that she told stories. So I would say what was probably one of the most impactful things for me was remembering how important and how crucial stories are. I think she shared something about, you know, stories are the way that we share and the way we teach and survive. And it was just such a good reminder of the way that stories can be impactful in a business setting and also in a personal setting. And all of her stories reflected that. So that's kind of a small tangent. But for me, it was just the reminder of the impact of stories, the power that they can have.
You know, it's funny you say that because one of my favorite stories actually in the book, and I kind of agree with you, like I liked, what I liked about it was I liked getting that story and then getting that conviction point behind it. This is why I said that story. That's one of the biggest values that I got out of the book. And when you're saying that, I'm like, it just brought me right back to the Warby Parker story in 1,000 words or less, friends and glasses. I mean, I live and breathe and I can't get out of bed without my glasses. So that's one story that I like related to and sticks in my brain because of that. But and then just saying, well, okay, well, this is what it's meant to be about. This is how you today. This is how it's broken down. This is all the pieces about it. That was really very valuable to me. And that's what I enjoyed also out of the book. Just like ever how if we're going to teach you something, we're going to teach it to you in a story with a story and then point out the benefit of that story. And that's, I think she did a great job at that.
Yeah, absolutely. And simple stories too. You know, just about her life or people that she met along the way.
I really appreciated using her own stories. And the fact that actually at the very end of the book, she was getting into kind of making you realize you have stories to tell that you might not realize you can tell. And because I've definitely been a victim of not using my own life's stories to tell stories. And well, that's just me talking about, you know, myself. It's not really interesting, but if you can craft it into a good story, it absolutely can be. Like it was, oh, what was it? She was saying like someone she was talking to and it was like talking about their upbringing and this loss here and that event that had happened that was so tragic and et cetera. And she said, you should really tell your story. He's like, me? I don't have any stories to tell. It's like, I was riveted by your whole story. You were just telling me about your life. Like how often we forget, man, we all have got these stories that we should be thinking about how to use them better because, I think honestly, probably half the stories in the book were from her own life or from, you know, her husband and his experiences, et cetera.
Yeah. And stories that sometimes felt insignificant in and of themselves, but the way that they then conveyed her message made the story have, you know, it was very unique. And the stories weren't always this huge, massive event or something like that. They were simple a lot of the time.
Do you have a story then of how you started maybe using stories or stories about stories? So is there something that you've taken out of the book that you started now doing differently with stuff at Better Career or interactions with people or just talking to your dog and seeing if they listen better? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say, like I said, this book was, I think, really inspiring for me to think about the way that I'm telling stories, because I think there's been a lot of hype around storytelling and in sales and in business. And it got to the point where I kind of put storytelling to the side because it just almost felt like overhyped. Everyone's talking about it. And so this was a good time to kind of revisit, you know, how am I actually approaching stories? And so recently we've had some workshops. We did a big public workshop with a lot of job seekers. And then we also did a very small one with just the members of our community. And in both of those instances, I played around with more of, you know, the way that I was telling someone's story that was a career changer and how ultimately really understanding their value helped them beat out other candidates, ones that had years and years of experience. And then, you know, ultimately how he started his career and now he's in the President's Club as a sales engineer. And so I've been trying to play around better with the way that I'm telling story and using her framework of, I'm trying to remember all four, identifiable characters, authentic emotion, a significant moment, and then specific details, which I think has been a helpful framework because a lot of the frameworks that I'm used to hearing about are like the Pixar, I think it's 7 steps or 9 steps. And sometimes it just feels like too many steps. Yeah. And so this was
That's a
helpful
a lot of steps
framework.
Remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. And sometimes I found myself trying to squeeze in stories that didn't quite fit in that framework. And so being able to experiment with hers has, I think, been in helping me improve my stories. Now, truthfully, I need to get feedback from others, maybe those in the audience, to see, you know, is this resonating with you? But, you know, feedback can be a tricky thing when it's a larger workshop.
I wonder if you've, you know, you or someone else in the meeting has noticed when you shift that style, do you get more people suddenly going, oh, this is an interesting story and engaging, you know?
Yeah. See, now that's what I need to kind of set up is to try to figure out I think for our smaller workshops, that's something that's easier for me to gauge because I can see people on camera and whether or not they're, you know, leaning in or mm-hmm. looking at their phones. But I think with the larger ones, you know, sometimes we have surveys, but that's something I need to implement. And that's honestly a question that I wanted to ask you all is, you know, what is the best way to practice stories and in a way that you also get feedback? Because a lot of what she talks about is the importance of understanding your audience and how you can actually tell a story that if it doesn't, you know, resonate with your audience, it's not going to land and be impactful. And so I was thinking a lot of, you know, what are the best spaces to actually practice? Because if you do it for a presentation in front of a customer, well, if you told a really bad story, can you afford to tell a bad story in order to get that practice in, you know?
How I've always approached that is my partner, my salesperson, whoever I'm working with, I'm going to tell you this story and I'm going to make sure that you, I have always taken the fundamental belief that if I'm in a meeting with a salesperson and we're going to go deliver a message and I'm telling a story, you know, you're going to know it first. There's not going to be any surprises. Yeah. Because if I can see the thing about working, in my opinion, working as a team, you can win together and you can lose together. And in sales, we lose more often than we win, nature of sales. But we have to be able to like, okay, we all agree we're going to tell this story. There's validity that the salesperson is saying, okay, yeah, I think you're right about that story because you're great. That's in the agenda. You know, sitting down in front of your computer and turning on Snagit or whatever and recording yourself any possible way you can and then just listening back. Did I even make sense? Like, it's funny. A writing trick I use when I write and because whenever I write something, I'm writing a little book thing right now. The first pass is horrible. Like, it's more red and blue than it is any other color. And then I go through and I fix the spelling. And I fix the grammar. And then I read it out loud. And it's funny, my poor wife and daughter get to hear me reading out loud in my office every word. Because my daughter's bedroom is right across the way from my office. And she knows more about modern marketing techniques than anybody now. But and my poor wife, who she's a nursing supervisor at a hospital and works second shift sometimes, so she's downstairs sleeping below me, and she knows about modern marketing too. But I literally shout it, and then I hear if I've missed something, or I hear like, "Wow, here, there makes no sense." Correct, correct, correct. But yeah, it's you got to practice. You got to practice by yourself. You got to record yourself, and you got to practice with that person you're presenting with. In my opinion.
Yeah.
Or find people to practice with. I mean,
yeah,
there are people out there, like we're a whole community of pre-sales folks all trying to get better, you know, at the art of storytelling in some way. Find a group of people, say, hey, I want to get together with a group of six other people to practice telling a story. We'll make it a reciprocity thing. I used that word right? I think I did. Everyone gets 5 minutes. You tell your story, you get feedback for 5 minutes, and then we'll go around the circle. We'll make it an hour meeting. I think you would get many takers for that type of a session. I know I would want to go because I got a story that I've not told before. I want to get some feedback on.
Yeah.
Especially because I think, Adam, the benefit of doing that maybe instead of doing it with someone you work with is someone you work with is going to be very concerned with the specific detail that you're providing.
Yes.
And I think there's a difference between getting feedback on your specific detail versus getting feedback on how you're presenting the story. Did I emotionally engage that story? My sales counterparts aren't going to really tell me whether or not they felt emotionally connected to the story. They'll be like, nope, those are all the right facts. That's right.
That's a good point.
But if I'm telling it to someone who doesn't know my business, I tell them the story. They're like, ooh, that was kind of boring. Or I really felt like, oh, wow, I felt like it seemed like that was a really compelling narrative that you had. Like, they're going to give you more about that, which is, I feel like, what you want feedback on more, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, why don't we organize it? It seems like such a good idea, Jack. I think we should make it happen.
I think we've just set up something we need to do in in the Demo Jockeys Slack channel. So
absolutely.
We'll get this set up.
Yeah, that's great.
So join the Slack and join our storytelling sessions. We're going to be starting out, apparently.
Stay tuned for more.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. Literally, we're building this ship while we fly it, I guess.
Oh, totally are. We haven't. Yeah, we haven't stopped building yet, and we hopefully we never will.
Yeah.
But I do want to. I want to get your thoughts on one thing. I want to steer it back towards the book. When I read through this book, I like how she said, "Okay, this is what makes a great story. Then these are the story types: the value story, the founder story." What I found useful from that is, here's my, when, with my work and how I approach everything is I'm always looking for a reference point. And in my job today, my day job, it's, I'm helping build a new practice. It's a lot of fun, get to build a lot of stuff, write a lot of documents, but is there a format that I should be following, or is there a bar that's already been set that I can take my story and adapt it to? So through pen and paper, through writing, well, keyboard and Google Docs, I should say, not pen and paper anymore. through keyboard and Google Docs, I want to tell these stories, but...
That just sounds weird. Could you switch back to pen and paper, please? I'm not comfortable with this new way of changing that phrase.
I don't like that.
So, pen and paper.
Pen and paper. Where was I? Oh, yes, right. So, what I've done is, okay, great, because I've... Now that I know that this is a founder story, I'm going to plug it in here and it actually makes sense. Now that I know that this is this type of story, a purpose story, I'm going to put it here and I'm going to make sense. This is a value story. I'm going to tell it this point in the document. And it's all going to help me build the structure. And my point is that this book did give me a blueprint that helped. And what I, again, what I liked about it is that blueprint allows me to then plug things into the appropriate spots. So it's not just about telling the story. It's how to mechanically tell the story correct.
I think for me, I mean, I love the framework. I also thought it was interesting that she introduced the framework and then the story types and then story pitfalls. I felt like it really helped take me through the journey in a way where I was really learning and understanding the framework before actually going. I feel like a lot of times a lot of authors or speakers go immediately to the pitfalls in the very beginning. Yeah. But for me, yeah, I agree. I think the framework really gave me a better understanding of the types of stories, the difference between them, and what are the different factors that make them effective and in what settings. And to be honest, with a lot of storytelling workshops that I've, you know, been a part of or seen, I leave them feeling inspired by a story, but not exactly sure how to replicate it. And I didn't feel that way with this book.
No, that's a good point. I didn't feel that way either with this book.
No, I felt like I could, and I could definitely replicate at least some pieces of it right away. And and what you mentioned about pitfalls was very similar to me as well, because I didn't necessarily catch on to the not going right at the pitfalls, but she made a phrase about making sure you've set up the normal, what normal is, somewhere, somehow. Oftentimes, you don't have time to do that at the beginning, but in order to understand how big of a conflict or an issue something is, you have to understand what not the issue or the conflict is, right? I've always gone to, okay, we're in the middle of a big problem is like my starting point.
Yeah.
And it, while that gets the job done, especially in corporate storytelling, that can get the job done. Her point she made is that if you haven't spent time in the normal, it doesn't seem like a real person. Which was this big like aha moment for me, because I've always struggled with every story that I tell sounds so formulaic, sounds so made up. Adam and I actually talked about that in the last episode, that it's just like made up name, made up problem, fill in the blank, fill in the blank, fill in the blank. And it's so generic. It literally, you most of the time listening to it, you don't think it actually happened. But if I set up the normal, in the normal is where something becomes personable and a real person actually having these experiences. I was like, yes, that's what I need in order to start having people actually believe that I'm not making up these stories that I'm telling you.
And it's the specific details too, I think, which she talked about a lot, of like including those details and not trimming the fat so much that you actually lose what makes it truly a story. And that really stuck out to me, is like keeping in some of the details of like, oh, it's not just Sally who was, a clerk. It's Sally who, loved bananas. And, there's a piece in there that's probably a terrible example. But they include things that you almost think aren't necessary for the story. But that's what makes it kind of helps bring you in.
Well, that's part one of two of our conversation with Maddie. Having fun so far. Tune back in next week where, we're going to get into more of what Maddie's been getting into. Second half of the conversation is just as good as the first, I think. Having just as much fun. But meanwhile, all the things, look, this show doesn't exist without all of you. And the way this show grows, tell your friends about it. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe, like, throw a comment in there. Look, if you're listening to this show, do us a favor, go over to YouTube, find it, and throw a comment on the episode. Let us know what you think. That really will help. It will help a lot. And obviously, join the Slack community as well, as you mentioned before. What else? What else? Am I forgetting something, Adam?
Yes. You should stay focused, Jack.
I can't stay focused.
Well, then maybe we should talk about this next book coming up. Stay focused, everyone.
We're going to be talking focus. About
stolen focus. Excuse me.
You need it as well.
Yeah, because I can't pay attention. I really need some freaking help. No, this is actually a book I'm very much looking forward to. Great, interesting book. So, yeah, that's what we'll be talking about.
Why you can't pay attention and how to think deeply again. Come on. We have a great guest lined up, so stay tuned. I'm not telling you who it is yet, but you're going to enjoy that conversation as well. So pick up that book. There'll be a link in the description to it. All right, well, I think that's it then. I guess we'll see everybody next week.
See you next week.
See you next week. Bye.